does join us now in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, getting ready for the weekend. And we wish it was a weekend with Cardinal baseball against the Baltimore Orioles. That is just not the case, though. Dan continues to bring you great Cardinal coverage here on 101 ESPN, and we appreciate that. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Everything's terrific, and you are continuing to provide us, as I mentioned, all kinds of Cardinal news, and there's still a lot going on around the ball club.
Well, there is. I mean, you think about what's happening with the labor agreement and diving into that, which I've tried to do a little bit as much as I can, how it affects the upcoming draft, how it affects the international draft, and just looking and reading about what's happening internationally with, you know, different leagues trying to get back to spring training, if you will, which has not been good news. They've shut those down for the most part. And what that might mean as we try to come back. So, look, I try to hold out hope that we are going to have a season at some point, and I think that's the only thing you hold your breath with. What do we have? What's it going to look like? What's it going to look like when we come back? But here's the bottom line, guys. I can tell you this in talking with people that are in the game at the highest levels and those that are the players and those that are the broadcasters around the league, who I'm especially close with, everybody is in agreement that no matter what it looks like, just get back on the field, just play. And I think everybody would be happy to see that.
That's what I was kind of going to ask you. If this keeps getting pushed back, Dan, if you thought if there was any sort of a minimum number of regular season games at this point, I'm with you with the idea of, hey, just play, expand the playoffs if you want to, give everybody a fair shake and run it out. I just wonder if there's a baseline number they feel like they have to hit.
Boy, that's the million-dollar question, I think, Brad. And to that point, what's your drop-dead date? And I don't have an answer, and I don't think anybody has an answer, because as this thing gets pushed back even further and further and further, I think you say, okay, well, we're at 120 games, or we're at 100 games, now we're at 80. Well, we might be able to get in 60. What about 45 and do like a round-robin tournament of some sort and do something different? I think the general feeling that I get with everybody that I talk to is that it's an open canvas, which is what I always keep saying. It's an open canvas, whether it's rules in the game and how you play the game and roster construction. But the bottom line is, with everybody I talk to, is it doesn't really matter. Let's just get back on the field. And let's face it, guys, if you get back on the field, that's a sign of somewhat normalcy, with or without a crowd. But it's a sign that baseball is coming back. And then in conjunction with that, that other sports then are coming back. Now, how does that look? I just don't know. And I don't want to speculate because no one knows. And that's from the highest people on down. We just don't know. But the bottom line is the general consensus and feeling is, and the bottom line of this whole thing is, let's just get back on the field and whatever it looks like, so be it. Let's just get back playing.
I love hearing that, Dan, because that's what everybody wants. I keep finding myself, though, and not negatively, it's just kind of I follow the money a lot of times, and I'm trying to like crunch the numbers, and math was never a thing of mine, so it's probably not going in a good direction. But
well,
I wonder,
by the way, real quickly,
yeah,
you just hit the key in this whole thing. Follow the money.
Yeah.
Follow
yeah.
the money.
But
what's going to bring people back.
That's what I'm trying to do, though, when it comes to a certain amount of games being played, because I wonder how much owners are going to feel like, okay, well, I'll start paying these salaries again, but I don't know what my gate's going to look like because people are still afraid of being around people. I'm sure there's a math problem there as well.
I think it's a totally legitimate question with this, and take it even further. So Mookie Betts is going to get a year of service this season, and whether or not we play. And what's that going to mean after this season when just do the economics. It's, you know, it's not an endless pit of money. If teams aren't making money, they can't pay what maybe you would have gotten on the open market in a quote-unquote normal season. At least I wouldn't think so.
That's
now, you may
call.
Have some rogue owners out there that are worth billions and billions of dollars, and they don't care, and they say, look, I'm willing to pay you whatever, and all of a sudden, you know, we come back, and may take a year or two, and you're going to be worth that price. That may happen. I don't know. But I think, though, that the players have to understand, too, that everybody in our world, everybody is taking a haircut with this, and you're not excluded. So think of the economics of no revenue coming in. That means no revenue going out, no salaries going out. We can't afford to pay you what you probably were worth before this happened. And then there's coming through it and what you're worth afterwards. And I think the really big thing here, and I don't know if you guys agree, is college sports. I mean, I'm reading some of these articles about these coaches that are making $10 million a year, and that's great. You were worth that then. But the economic climate is changing. Everything is changing. And if you're not changing with it, then shame on you. That's part of what's going on here. And, you know, wake up. For God's sakes, wake up. There's people that are going to miss paychecks. There are people that are going to miss multiple paychecks that weren't making multi-million dollars. Christ's sakes, wake up.
With you.
I am usually on the side of, I'm on the side of players almost all the time in terms of what I believe they're worth and what I think they should be paid. But you're right, when it comes to this, this is something that all of us are probably going to have to deal with. A lot of people already are dealing with this. Do you think that, for the most part, major leaguers who do well and who have done well are going to go along with that idea that, you know what, maybe I might have to take a little bit of a cut here so that I can make sure this younger player who doesn't have the salary I have is able to get paid, or even a minor leaguer? Do you think most players would go along with that?
Boy, I don't know. I think these guys are the best in the world at what they do. And I've said this multiple times, they're elite. Brad, when you were playing, you're elite. You're one of the best in the world at what you did.
Say it again, Dan, real quick. Can you say that again?
And if you weren't, you wouldn't have been there. They would have found somebody else to take your spot. There's only a handful in the world that do what they do. I think a lot of it maybe is dependent on what our world looks like when we come out of this. Are there going to be fans going to the ballpark? What are the economics of that? Because, you know, baseball is and I can only speak on at least to an extent in this realm, is that a lot of it is dependent on people coming through the turnstiles, the revenue made. I mean, they're dependent on that. All sports are, but especially baseball. When you have 162 games and 81 of those are at home, and from the Cardinals' point of view, I mean, you're getting big, big crowds, so you're making some pretty good money off of people coming through the turnstiles. And I would think that if we have something that comes and snaps this virus out and we all feel healthy going to the ballpark, that all of a sudden, you know, you're getting back to square one and you're making money. But until that time comes, it's a very, very tough question to answer. I just don't know. And I think your question is very logical and it's smart. I just don't know, because, you know, from their point of view and their shoes, they're saying, look, I'm the best at what I do in the world. I've worked my tail off to get there, and I deserve to be paid as such. Will some of those guys believe that they should be paid X amount of dollars that's very high, even though the economic climate has changed? I just can't answer that. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but that's just the way I look at it, read the tea leaves off the top of my head.
Dan McLaughlin with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Danny, yesterday we had four either current or future Red Jacket wearers on the show. We had Ozzie, we had Tony, we had Chris Carpenter, and we had Matt Holliday. I want to start here. Do you agree with me that the best team that you've ever seen over a six-month season was the 2004 team?
End of story, period, yes.
I think that group is going to wind up with 11 Red Jackets. Tell me if you agree. Pujols, Renteria, Roland, Langford, Edmonds, Yachty, and then you move down to the pitchers with Morris. I think he'll get one. I think, well, Carpenter's in, Izzy, and then I think Dave Duncan and La Russa, obviously, already. That's 11, and that doesn't even include Larry Walker, who won't get a Red Jacket because he wasn't here for 3 years. But I think the Red Jackets will bear out that was the best group of Cardinal players, in addition to the best unit that they've ever had.
You know, Randy, I know you're a guy that loves numbers. That team started out, I believe, 15-15.
Right.
After the first month of the season. So for a five-month period, you'd be hard-pressed to find in the history of baseball a team that was better for a five-month period than that group. And they just happened to run into a team of destiny. I hate using that. It's cliche, but it's true. Where guys just get on fire and all of a sudden they win a championship. I'm with you. I think all those guys are going to go in at some point. And you got to remember with the Cardinals Hall of Fame, it's not being watered down. I know some people say, well, it's going to get watered down after years. No, it's not getting watered down. It's just there's been a lot of great teams and great players over the years, and they eventually will get in. Renteria should be in.
Mm-hmm.
Morris will, you know, should be in. Those guys that you're talking about should be in. But when you start putting, you know, when you start out a Hall of Fame and you've got, you know, guys like Edmonds and who to me is a baseball Hall of Famer, much less a Cardinal Hall of Famer, and you got Ted Simmons and you got some of the others that are going to go in. I think Keith Hernandez is another one. I think he should be in already. It's tough to say, oh, I'm going to give my vote to Matt Morris. And it's no disrespect to Matt Morris because I think he should be in. He was dominant for a good portion and period of time in Cardinals history. It goes back to like Julian Javier and some of these others that I think should be in too. But that's the beauty of having a Cardinal Hall of Fame. This is specific to that player, that era, and what the fans felt about that player and that era. You know, we all can debate whether, you know, what you thought was going on with McGuire was right or wrong, but the fans voted him in. They are the ones that put him in, so he should be in. But I'm with you. I think 2004 is the type of season that you just don't forget. I remember the other thing about that team is that those guys in that rotation, they didn't miss a start. I mean, hardly anybody got hurt, so they had – I guess if you want to call it luck, good fortune, whatever, but those guys never missed a start. So you had consistency all the way through, and then you had what was a collection of great players. I think another debate, and it's probably a great segment for you guys at some point because I know you got plenty of content to talk about.
Yeah, that's right.
David Fries. You know, David Fries is a really interesting character with the Cardinals Hall of Fame. He would apply under their rules, at least I believe so, under the rules of, and I know you're on the committee, Randy, of being a potential Cardinals Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
And this is about Cardinal fans. This is about a time in history. This isn't about a 15-year period. This is about having qualifications for the Cardinals Hall of Fame, and then in those qualifications, what you did with that 3 to 5 year period. And that's what makes this fun. That's what makes this great. That's what creates debate. And in my mind, David Fries should wear a red jacket. And believe me, when he's announced on opening day, if he's a Cardinals Hall of Famer, you think he'd get booed? You think anybody would think lesser of him? I don't think so. I think we all know his place in Cardinals history, which is one of the great places that anybody would want to be in.
I think as soon as we in the Red Ribbon Committee put him on the ballot, he gets voted in. After 3 years of retirement, I don't have any doubt that he'll be in his first year of eligibility. And when we put him up on the ballot, I think that he'll be voted in by the fans.
And people will have to take a look beyond what happened in the postseason. He was a very good player for the St. Louis Cardinals.
He had a 783 OPS as a Cardinal in 5 years.
Yep. The OPS is very good. And the fact that he is a hometown kid.
Mm-hmm.
So we all can, you know, that's something that resonates with a lot of people from St. Louis. A hometown kid that had a great run in town, wore that jersey with pride, represented the Cardinals with pride. And, oh, by the way, he had one of the most historic postseasons in the history of baseball. And he's part of what is maybe, it's up for debate, but Game 6 is one of the greatest baseball games that was ever played, period. To me, let's celebrate that. That's cool. It's not watered down. He's not a Hall of Famer. But don't water it down just because he didn't play for 10 years. Look at what the excitement that he brought for a short amount of time in that postseason, but also the body of work, which is very, very good.
I would say good luck if you're the one that is tasked to bring a case against David Freese at this point, because I'm right there with you. When you think about iconic moments, that guy's there. I believe he should be wearing a red jacket as well. Hey, all this Hall of Fame talk and coupled with the 04 talk for a minute got me thinking about one of my favorite humans on earth in Larry Walker. When you are thinking back, Dan, you've seen so many baseball players over the years.
By the way, Brad, do you remember that you and I were having dinner during spring training of 2 years ago? And we looked up, and there was something involving Larry Walker, and we texted him, and he had some really nice messages for us. Yeah, but anyway, I digress.
They were very, very clean and very perfect, and he is a gentleman. He's such a good dude. He's one of my favorite humans, but the skill set is – the skill set was amazing. When you think about all the baseball players that you've seen, where do you put Larry Walker?
He's in my top 10 for sure, just off the top of my head, and I watched him – for, you know, a year and a half, and he did some things that we weren't seeing even the best players doing, and he was doing at the age of 37 and 38. He retired when he was 38. And what I mean by that, little things like taking the extra base, but deking runners defensively with the skill set that he had. He had a very good arm, obviously could hit for power, hit in big situations. Look at his OPS at the age of 38. I actually tweeted that out not too long ago. It's above 800. It might have been like over 900 in that 1 year, that full year with the Cardinals. And he did it with a bad back, a really, really bad back. And I told you that story how he's one of the players that's come to me and thanked me for not covering for him, but explaining to fans that we're not seeing the true Larry Walker because – he was on a training table most of the day just so he could go out for the 3 hours during the night and play and then go back on the training table. The guy had big guts, and he played hurt. He played tough, and he was a remarkable, as you know, Brad, he was a remarkable person and teammate. So when I look back at his career, it's really weird. Like, I go to fantasy camp every year to go record spots and do some various things production-wise for the Cardinals. And when I see him and he's up, they do this thing called, as you know, Brad, but I'm trying to explain it for the listeners. They do this thing called the morning meeting, and the former players will get out in front, and the campers are all a group that's in the back, and they all get ripped on, and it's kind of fun. And, you know, hey, we had Joe Blow and he can't catch a fly ball, and we got this guy and the ball went through his legs, and they call him out and everybody's having fun. But when I look at those guys that are up there, I think of Larry Walker as a Cardinal. I don't know why I do, and I know he's had so many years in Montreal, and I know he had so many years in Colorado, and he'll go in as a Rocky, and deservedly so. But, man, that time that he had with the Cardinals, and I guess part of it is back to what Randy was talking about, being part of that 2014 that was so good, and 2005 was over 100 wins and was so good. It's just – I just think of him as a Cardinal. I don't know why I do, and maybe I'm crazy and I'm the only one that does, but that's my personal feeling. And to your original question, I think he's one of the top 10 players I've ever seen in my life. And I called his 3-home run night in St. Louis, ironically enough, and not to make it a sad story, but Jack Buck was going through his illness and eventually passed away. And Joe was on the game, and I was doing the sidelines. And Joe left, and I wound up calling the finishing moments of the game, but probably the final 3 or 4 innings as Joe went to be with his father. And that happened to be the night that Larry Walker hit 3 home runs at Busch Stadium, too. And so I saw him in his prime. I saw him when Tony La Russa didn't want to pitch to him, and I saw him at the end when he wasn't nearly the player that he was. But, man, was he still really, really good. And the Cardinals, I believe, awarded him with the 2006 World Series ring because they felt – that Larry was such an important part of nurturing and helping some of those young players along. And so Larry has a very special place in Cardinal history, and Larry also has a very special place in his heart of what the Cardinals mean to him.
So many great things happened at Busch Stadium, and we know would have continued to happen had we had a season this year. We've already talked about opening day and missing out on all of that stuff. You know, the smells and the sights of just being in the ballpark. One of the things I feel like we are really getting robbed of this year, if in fact there is no baseball, is crapping all over the Astros. And I was really hoping that we were going to get to spend the 2020 season doing
just that.
Don't
forget about the Boston Red Sox.
And the Boston Red Sox. Do you think we could just pick that right back up in 21 if there is no season this year?
I do think it'll be interesting how this plays out from this time forward, because clearly the attention of the baseball world and the sports world has been whether or not you come back and play. And then what does that look like? And how are guys getting prepared? And it really has just gone away. It's taken a backseat. However, I think if, for argument's sake, let's just say we come back and there's crowds and we're experiencing the baseball that we all know, I do think it then comes back to the forefront and you hear more about Boston, you hear more about Carlos Beltran, you hear more about Houston. I don't know. I don't think it's a story that goes away. No matter when and if we go back to baseball, I still think it's going to be there. I just don't think it'll have the impact that maybe it once did. I think people will just be so happy just to have baseball. And you'll hear, you know, hear the cat calls and people banging their, you know, the seats and stuff like that. But it won't be to the point that maybe it would have been in a regular, quote unquote, normal year. I can tell you this. I don't know if it was two or three games that I think it was three that in spring training in which the Astros were involved with the Cardinals, one at their place and two in Jupiter at the St. Louis home. And, I mean, people were screaming at these guys. I mean, screaming.
I have one of them with you. It was great.
Fastball. You know, saying, we don't have trash cans here. I mean, it was unbelievable. And at that time, I was thinking, and Brad, you and I were talking about, I was like, we got 6,000 people here, right? 6,000, which you could look at it two different ways. You could look at it that it's an intimate setting, so you might hear more. The other side is, it's 6,000. Now let's go ahead and add, 35 more thousand to the 6,000. What's that going to be like? And their season, and if we have a season, they finish up in the final week of the regular season in the Bronx, in New York. You think those people want something to cheer about? You think those people want to get after some people? Oh, I would think so. And so if baseball comes back, at least currently constructed, you pick up the season where it was. So there's going to be unbalance with the schedule. There's going to be inequities. That's fine. But to this question is that they'd still have to go to New York and play the Yankees. Huh. And at that point in time, man, people are going to ready to be unleashed, which would be awesome. I think it would be great.
Dan, you're the best.
So
thanks. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Love it, guys. I'll see you next Friday. Thanks.
You bet. Take it easy. That is the great Dan McLaughlin joining us here on 101 ESPN. Next up, sometimes the most common things just don't make any sense. Why do we park in driveways and drive on parkways? We'd love to hear from you with the Mic Drop feature with the 101 ESPN app, and we'll have some of those next on 101 ESPN.